Good evening and welcome to Shed Sessions. What a wonderful, wonderful treat we have in store for everyone who's listening, and a real treat for me and
Andy,
who is on the photography and the filming, and Ian, who is on audio. We're all feeling so lucky to have Mount St. Helen with us today. And I welcome Aris and Francesco into the shed for what is going to be a magnificent stripped back session.
What's in your shed? What's in your shed? Pictures and treasures and the books that we read. What's in your shed? What's in your shed?
How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing great. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for having us. We're doing really good. This place is wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you like it. I was so thrilled that we connected and you were able to come and do this session. I've been looking forward to it for a while. And here you are. These things just happen. Suddenly, these dreams come true. And I'm so, so happy you're here with us. So, yeah, we're going to have a great night of music and conversation. And it's a shame the rest of the band couldn't make it, but it is quite a small space. And we get the unique opportunity to hear your music in a different way. And I suppose it's also fun for you to play in a stripped back fashion. So we are missing Dan, Ryan, and I think that's it. Yeah. So Dan on guitar and Ryan on drums, and I guess
Dan on bass.
Dan on bass. Yeah. I just wrote guitar. I guess, yeah, you're on guitar, Francesco. Of course. Do you not call a bass? You generally call bass. You don't call it guitar.
Yeah, but you could say bass guitar if you want.
Yeah, that's better. Bass guitar. I play a bit of bass guitar. Yeah. And yeah, I would say if someone said, do you play guitar? I'd say I play bass. Yeah. So there you go. I should have known better. But yeah, I guess they'll be able to hear this episode and they're part of it, this whole...
They might be listening in now.
If it was a live episode, that would be great. As usual, I'll start this episode with just a little rambling about day-to-day life, and I generally talk about the weather and the springtime and just observations. And recently I've noticed the frog spawn in the pond has come on nicely, two massive lumps of frog spawn, and I can see how science fiction films are inspired by nature because they look really
kind of alien.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you. And it's always a sign of spring coming. And if you look closely into the pond, you see the frogs all stuck together. I guess that's how they end up making more frogs and all tadpoles. But they're the weirdest things, aren't they? They like metamorphosize. Is it metamorphosize when they go change?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Well, it is now.
Yeah, I think insects tend to go through like those stages of metamorphosis, but the frogs are really interesting to watch, and it fills me with hope and light and joy for this time of year. It's really good, and at night you can sometimes hear the frogs making weird old noises. Mm. Not the usual croaking sounds, they're just rather strange, but I like listening to that.
The tadpoles, when they're clumped together, they look so communal. You know, like pre-life stage community, you know, like little embryos are stuck together, you know. I can see why you look at them and feel so positive about it, because it's like they're already together before everything starts to happen, you know.
Yeah. Aris, that's perfect. Thank you. I needed that. I knew by talking about frogs we would get some...
Yeah, I think about frogs very often.
Oh, good. Frogs are great. Well, maybe you don't. I'm watching Stranger Things with my son. He's not watched it before. And as you came in this evening, you saw it on the telly and we had a brief chat about it. And there's this kid in there. His name's Mike, I think. Will Byers' friend. So Mike is one of the group of boys. And some kid pushed him over in the school playground and they called him Frog Face. Which was really sad, but I can see kind of he's got these lovely big eyes and it's not an insult. I felt like it's quite nice to have these like big features.
They say the same thing about them. Have you seen Sex Education?
Yes, I've seen that.
Maeve Wiley, is that her name? Sex Education. Yeah, she's also called Frog Face, and.
Ah, well, and she's beautiful.
She's gorgeous. Stunning,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think it's by any stretch of the imagination an insult, I don't think.
So frogs are good. Yeah. And one other thing was I've been watching this... I watched this film on Netflix. It is called The Greatest Night in Pop. And it's about...
The We Are the World documentary. Ooh.
That's the one. So it's that famine relief, or it's about... They were creating a single, a song for, like, Live Aid, but it's about, it's America, Africa, famine relief. I can't remember what the whole scheme was called, I don't know. And I found it was so interesting because I didn't realize all those amazing artists were in the same place at the same time. It was incredible. And what really like made me laugh was when the...
Are you going to say the Bob Dylan thing?
Yeah.
No. I was actually going to say that. You go ahead.
I haven't watched it, but I've been told about it by like a mentor of mine, and being like how he was incredibly self-conscious because a lot of quote-unquote real singers were in the room, and he got a bit... I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I can imagine, you know, like folk icon next to something like, I think Cyndi Lauper was in there as well.
Yes, she was there.
Yeah. Bruce Springsteen and all that, you know, like everyone with all the different voices and some more like vocally trained than others, being a bit like, oh no, but that's crazy because it's Bob Dylan.
It is Bob Dylan. But he knows perhaps that he's not able to sing at that level. Like he's the genius in writing, and I still believe he can sing. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. I love Bob Dylan. I've seen him in concert and his band about 7 or 8 times. Wow. On his recent tour, I saw him then too. But it was interesting to see him in like everyone was singing, and he looked like I would have looked singing in a group. I would just be like kind of awkward and moving my mouth slightly, not really projecting at all. But yeah, that was really interesting. And the other part that I found really funny was as everyone was arriving, Bruce Springsteen was arriving, and the narrator at that point said, and then Bruce Springsteen turned up in his Pontiac GTO, and then he goes, oh, there's Ray Charles. It's really him. And he says, like, it's like the Statue of Liberty just walked in. And I thought, isn't that amazing? Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, it's brilliant. And then I was just blown away by seeing all those people, Tina Turner, as you said, Cyndi Lauper, Michael Jackson, Lionel Richie, Bob Dylan, Sheila E. I think she's the percussionist for Prince. But yeah, I could recommend watching that. As music lovers, it was a definite bonus. I loved watching it so much. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. That took a bit longer than usual.
Apologies.
Sorry, that's my fault. I tend to go on a little sometimes, but I would love to hear your first song.
Of course. This first song is called 19. Thank you.
sins. I didn't mean to hurt her or make her seem.
To Mount St. Helen. Wow, that is amazing. You guys always bring it with every song. It's just so bold and beautiful and just
stunning.
What an entrance. I love it so much. You guys are amazing. That's so good. Look, you've got me in tears almost from the start. Mm. I'm covered in goosebumps. This
sway
is nuts.
To Lord Heroes.
Well, I'm going to be in bits. That was incredible. I loved it so much. And what a beautiful age 19 is. I think all of us in the room have been there, and I actually remember being 19 quite well. I guess it was when my first year out of high school, and it's a really special time, and lovely to have a song that you can just listen to and drift off and remember those years. So yeah, that was beautiful. And this song you performed in the Lee Simpkins Theatre.
Yeah, Simpkins Lee. Even I'm getting it wrong.
Yeah. Oh, Simpkins Lee, not Lee. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Although
I get
Lee Simpkins sounds cooler. Actually.
Sounds a bit better. Yeah.
Oh, maybe we should suggest they change it. They'd never do that. It's probably like hundreds of years old.
Well, LMH is quite a recent college, so they could be down.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's called Simpkins Lee might mean that someone called Simpkins Lee gave a lot of money, so
best not change it. Yeah. So Simpkins Lee Theatre, you got to perform this song in there fairly recently without an audience, or there was probably, I mean, I know Andy was there doing the filming, and there's probably your sound tech people and whoever, but generally you were on your own. How did you get that set up? It was, and visually, it's beautiful. Like, it's such a lovely video to watch on your YouTube channel. Yeah. But yeah, tell us more about it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Those are all very kind words. We've always wanted to do like a live performance video. It's very useful in the beginning stages to just have a good amount of content or a good amount of videos that you can show people who you are in the flesh. That's the pragmatic side of it, which is always the boring side. In terms of why we chose that space and generally how it looks like, it's a very accessible space to us. We are, we're students of that college, so we could, have it basically when we wanted. But also, I've always loved the idea of, kind of like Pink Floyd echoes, bands performing or like bands at work in front of no one, doing it you know, just for themselves, really. And the way that the Simpkins Lee looks like, it's, you know, it's got all like these, you've got all these draw, like red draw curtains. You know, I know you can't see the colour because it's sort of black and white, but and it has this massive doorway in the middle, like an arch, and it goes, you know, it's like a couple stories high when you look at it. It's very, very vast, and it kind of, like, it reminded me a little bit of, like, you know, like avant-garde plays, or like, what's it, like Dogville by Lars von Trier, or, you know, recently, like, the Japanese House, amazing, amazing artist did a sort of video like that, very abstract, very white-walled, exhibition, art exhibition looking performance videos. And I always liked that sort of like quite stark white, nothing there, just you. And it's got a vastness to it, but also a homely feel, because it's so, you know, we walk past it every day. And I think it really suited the material that we were bringing, you know, because it's all to do with quite a lot of, like, the musical landscapes that we bring, I think, are quite vast. They do fill spaces, and so it was a no-brainer, really.
Well, visually it's perfect, and you explaining it is really helpful. It's captivating, it's raw, it's bleak, but then at the same time it draws you in. There's a warmth about it. And I've looked at your other videos which you have on your channel. There's the Pariahs Unplugged, where you're sitting in like an abandoned house, or that again is, it's got those lovely whitewash walls, or I assume they're white because it's again shot in black and white.
They were white. This has got a good story behind white, it. Yeah.
Well, it's an abandoned house on the beach, on the seaside of the place I go on holiday to, which is southern Italy. It's a village that basically no one goes to, and there was this one house just there. And we were walking past it every day to go and shoot the music video, which we'll tell you about it later, I guess. But we just saw it, and so I went asking to the cafe next door to it, to the beach bar next door to it, to ask whether they had any power to, I don't know, any sockets or anything that we could plug into.
And they just said, whose it was.
Yeah, and they just said, well, it's ours. So as long as you tag us on every video you make or invite us to your gigs, you can just have it for free whenever you want it. We had to kick some kids out of there at some point, but
yeah, we were. I mean, you know, two dudes dressed in suits in like the early parts of September, walking on the beach, like versus like 10 Italian kids. We would have lost that fight.
yeah, we just asked really kindly. We probably got called some names, and then they just went. But. Yeah.
I bet you they were hiding around the corner listening, because that must have been intriguing for them.
Oh yeah, it really was. It really was for them. Yeah, they were just watching from behind the walls. We could see them. They were just there, be like, "What are those guys doing in suits?"
But it's so lovely to know that you're combining your music with visual artistry as well, and that's what I find about your band. Is it's so. I don't know, it's like there's stuff unraveling. There's a story that's slowly ticking away, and if you follow it carefully, you'll get there in the end. And I feel I just need to be patient, but I want more. But I know that everything is so cleverly thought out, and it just suits me because I like the idea of a space. I like the energy a space brings, and to combine that with music is just incredible. So it's my cup of tea.
You hit the nail on the head there. You know, the whole point of why Mount St. Helens really started, it was in lockdown. I had a lot of time to think about what I want to do with my life, and obviously it was always going to be music. I played in bands for ages, but I really knuckled down on, you know, what's the sound going to be? What's the visual in my dream world? What would it be? And a lot of the times that was I wanted to be like the bands who had, you know, consistency in their work, their visuals, something that wasn't just music. It was, you know, a brand, a whole idea, a story, a narrative. And especially in like more modern cases of bands, or even just like, you know, companies, globalization and things, you know, the idea that one band has to do one thing, you know, just do just the music, and then you like pair it with some video to put it on YouTube for promo purposes. Sounded a bit arbitrary, and takes a lot of the fun out of making, you know, videos that are self-referential from previous things or things to come. And making that coherence, that consistency in a body of work is something that that was really, really intriguing to me. And then coming to study here, getting put onto bands such as like the 1975 and recently Sleep Token, two vastly different bands, but both of which have a very, very intimate lore construction. And I wouldn't compare like our music in any way to either of those two bands. But in terms of coherence and like just general unity in what they do, it's like for me one of the most inspiring things in music to do that.
Well, I can tell that you're drawing from that well, and your observation of the whole landscape is stunning, and it reminds me of really well-established bands. For example, Radiohead, being an Oxford band, they've gone through such a fascinating journey where you can actually, it's like stacking the volumes of books together. You can kind of see where it's going. And then more recently with The Smile, they're all already seasoned. So Tom York, Johnny Greenwood, and Frank Skinner. Tom Skinner.
From Sons of Kemet.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's very high praise, you know, this, like The Smile.
They are indeed great, and I can see this energy is about what you're doing and about bands like that. And when I watched 19 at the Simpkins Lee Theatre, that episode or that recording footage video, it made me think of The Smile. They released a music video where they went into a similar auditorium.
Yeah, in the school with the kids.
Yeah, with the kids. Yeah,
Wall of Eyes, was it? Might have not been. I can't remember.
I don't know which track, but wonderful, wasn't it? Like the Simpkins Lee reminded me of that. And then when you could see some of the seating in your video, and I thought it's lovely that it's empty, but then The Smile went and performed. Yeah. It must have been a school hall or something, a drama studio. But similar ideas, just getting those visuals, just how people interact with music.
Yeah.
It's great. I'd love to hear another song if you have one ready.
I do. Just give us a second to tune.
Just a second.
Stop copying me.
You shut up.
Yeah, we are the same replica of the person twice, right? That's what everyone keeps on telling us.
We just happen to be two people instead of one, but
we share brain cells as well, you know. Anyway, here's Zurich.
Way now, 'cause she's
Another beautiful song. The sound of those Stratocasters is incredible. It almost brings the song up into space with the stars. You can hear that sound. It's beautiful. I think those are my favorite guitars. I love them. I love the way they look. Mm. And
they look like they're going somewhere, you know.
Beautiful, beautiful. And yours is that's right. They do, yeah. And yours is that metallic gold with the fretboard is. How would you describe that? Like a red mottled, marbled.
Well, it's funny you mentioned it's an interesting story with this guitar. We were walking in on Cowley Road and we went into the Music Box?
Yeah, it's the Music Box. Yeah.
The Music Box, the secondhand store, and I go there often to just browse because you know musicians look at things that they don't need all the time and buy things they don't need even more of the time. And we were in there and just looking around at some stuff and doing some sort of crate digging gear-wise. And we saw this on the wall and it was like a Fender Strat for a very, very good price. And I was like, oh, God. And then we went and had a coffee and I was like, you know, we were talking. And then at some point, Francesca was like, you're still thinking about the Strat, aren't you? And I was like, yeah, I can't lie. I'm not listening. and so kind of impulsively, I'm a bit of an impulsive buyer when it comes to gear because I do feel like stories and you know, like laws around the instruments themselves do provide a lot of material and a lot of inspiration just you know in a material sense. And so I just went in there and bought it without thinking for a very great price. It still put me in some financial instability for a couple months, but I'd rather that than not have it. And then as we were walking out, I don't know to this day if it's a real Fender Strat or not, because as we were walking out and like we played it like as soon as we got it, basically I could see that the guy told us that there was a new neck that was put onto it, which is thicker than usual Stratocasters, but the logo is a sticker. And so to this day we don't know if it's like I know the body is real, but and maybe the previous owner took it from the old one and put it on the new one. Either way, I don't know, and I love it regardless. But yeah. Well, yeah, maybe it's the illegitimacy that fuels some of the writing. I don't really know. The bastard son, as it were.
Well, you were in the right place at the right time. I know that feeling where you walk away from something and you can't get it out of your mind, and then you need to go back. It's like in Wayne's World where Wayne sees that is it a Stratocaster?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that one, the white.
The white one Francesco's got, the white beauty. Whoa, it's like a pearl color. It's a stunner. Perhaps more white, but it's really good. And when Wayne goes, it will be mine. Oh, yes, it will be mine. Yeah. Is that how you felt?
It's not just how I felt. I hear that in my head. that exact
every time.
Sentence.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it was bound to happen. He'd been talking for months about buying a Jazzmaster replica. And then when he saw that, he didn't need it. when I was like, you need a strat, you need a strat, you need a strat. We saw that and I was like, dude,
you need a strat.
Yeah, scrap the Jazzmaster. This is what you're spending your money on.
Well, they go beautifully with that song. And like I said, actually moved me up to the stars. I could just hear the notes. And this is why I love this stripped back version, because you get to hear that. But then fully plugged in is wild, and it's a big sound, and reminds me of Sonic Youth. It's a big mash of beautiful noise, and it just sits so happily with me. I still haven't seen you live, though. This is from listening to your recorded songs. I missed out on your it wasn't your very first show, I don't think, the Lady Margaret Hall one. There was one before that, wasn't there?
Oh, in at the library.
Yes, yeah, the library was the first one, because your band is pretty new.
Yeah, that was actually that's the first, you know, recorded live, you know, public sighting of Matt Sinellan, as it were. But I was just opening as, you know, myself, completely unplugged for a friend of mine, Lord Bug, because they asked, and I said yes, and that was it. But the first fully fleshed performance that we gave was in the bar that Francesco used to work at, I now currently work at.
Oh, cool.
Which is the college's bar. And we thought that, you know, if it's going to be anywhere to debut, it will be there, since we spend so much time there and, you know, have had so many chats about so many important and unimportant things over a beer, then it felt right.
I saw some footage from that show, and I was really hoping to get there. I can't remember what the reason was. You know, I might have been with the kids, I'm not sure, but I was there in spirit. I knew it was happening, and again, your promotional stuff for it was just spot on. You know, you get it right. You know, it's not too much, it's just right. And like I say, the sound that I heard from that, and I know Andy was there doing some recording, photography, and
he
so
was,
on. And it sounds big and heavy, and I like that too. Yeah. I like it really a lot. And then you did a gig in London at the Hoxton?
Stag's Head in Hoxton.
Stag's Head.
Yeah. And how was that, venturing out of Oxford?
That was great. It was venturing out of Oxford and back into my hometown, London. You know, I'm not from around Hoxton, but it's always been a very trendy area, and all the scene London wise is brands, you know, Shoreditch and Hackney and that kind of area. It was good. We headlined, which was great. It was through a promoter, and so, you know, once you sell a certain amount of tickets, you get bumped up the order or dropped down the order, which I don't necessarily agree with as a system, but, you know, it seemed to benefit us, and I'm not complaining. But it was great. It's really great putting our sound that is usually very, very expansive and into like slightly smaller venues, but then people coming and saying, like, you know, exceeding the walls almost, or like, you know, when people say like blowing the roof off, no one actually said that for our gig, but it has that sort of feeling, you know, with like we play with like live backing track and have a lot of different tones to see, like, you know, it's we pride ourselves in it being not two guitars, bass, drums, but something much more expansive that seems to, you know, almost like elongate or expand whatever live entity that we're put in, even if it's like, you know, it could be the hugest stage or like the smallest, you know, pub venue, and it was still, I think, you know, at least I hope it carries that same expansiveness in whatever capacity it is in a live setting.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear all of that, and again, it's what, you know, you've got this vision, you've got this idea of what you're aiming for, and I can just see it in everything you do. It's very well thought out, and in an artistic way. It's not like mechanical business type thinking. It's you really care about what you're putting out there, which is good too.
What else we got, you know, like, if you don't care, then what are you caring about?
Well, yeah, exactly. So I'm so pleased that, you know, you're making music and you're sharing your art, and it's beautiful to see. And your most recent gig was at the Jericho Tavern, where I believe you played a cover of a Slow Dive song.
Yeah.
And also you taught me a thing or two, because they performed in the Jericho Tavern.
Yeah, they did. It was, well, we've always wanted to play the Jericho Tavern, especially coming to Oxford for, you know, for studying. There was, yeah, obviously like the uni and everything, but a big factor for me was the stories that I'd heard on, you know, by people or on YouTube or in interviews about about 90s shoegaze, which, at least to my knowledge, perpetuates kind of a like there was a big scene around Slough and Reading and Oxford, Oxfordshire, and that kind of area. And so I did a little bit of digging, and obviously the Jericho Tavern, you know, is where On a Friday, aka Radiohead, plays their first show. A lot of amazing bands, and I did some digging, you know, Supergrass and all that, and I found a poster of Slowdive, like a Slowdive poster, with like a bunch of dates on it, like kind of like I think one was like at Leeds Uni or something, or like, you know, sort
Leeds
of
Leeds University,
yeah, like Leeds Uni, which I
Union or something,
yeah, something like kind of like that kind of vibe, and Oxford was Jericho Tavern, and I was like, oh my god, like, you know, for a band that's, you know, got me through my GCSEs and as it were, and the sound of Mount St Helen is somewhat indebted to. We were like, we got to offer a homage, and we got to play a song that we, you know, we will love. And a lot of people came up to us after being like, I'm so glad you played that song. It's like you guys like Slowdive too. And I was like, I thought it wasn't cool to like Slowdive. You know, back when I was like 15, like none of the kids at school knew who Slowdive were. And I was like, yeah, you found us. And it's a very communal feeling that, and it was, I'm glad people enjoyed it.
Oh, great. And you were supported by the Bobo, yes, who are incredible.
Miraculously.
The Bobo.
Yeah, we love them too. They've been in the shed twice, which is the first band to have had a second visit. Yeah, I adore them, and to have them on the same night, perfect, wow.
We should have been opening for them.
Yes. That's very kind.
It was more than an honor to have them opening for us.
Yeah, it looked fantastic, and yeah, you can obviously, I think, are any of those going to go up on your YouTube channel, any of that?
Probably the, like most of the set that was taped. We'll do that when I get my ducks in a line, yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to your next song. Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is an incredible composition and lyrically beautiful. Wow, what a dreamy song. Love Thank it. You. That's so wonderful. And who are your old heroes? Who are those people you look up to and are influenced by?
Yeah, well, you see, I thought I knew, but every day it's someone different, isn't it? It starts with my family, for sure. My mum has been the patron saint of my music forever, you know. And my dad, you know, we have a really, really great relationship, father-son relationship, that I cherish and I'm very, very fortunate for. His side of the family, his grandparents, his mother was a violin player, and my grandfather was a textile merchant, you know, whose coat I'm wearing right now. It was tailored by him for my father, and it didn't fit, so it got passed down to me. And now I don't go anywhere without it. So it starts with the family. In terms of musical inspirations, every day is a different thing, you know. There's a lot of shoegaze, a lot of post-rock, to get the ethereal side of things going. I'm a cellist, first and foremost. That's where I got my schooling, in classical music, and so there's a lot of cello and string arrangements in our music. A bit of choral elements there as well. I used to sing in choirs, not so much now. But pairing with that ethereal, like using rock instrumentation for not rock-oriented purposes, choral harmony or things like that, so like, you know, they tie in quite nicely. I think just generally the manifesto for Mount St. Helens is using all those influences, even like early Coldplay as well, Radiohead of course, alt rock and Sonic Youth and noisy guitars to combine to make this what we hope to be a very ethereal, an expansive experience that isn't confined really to one specific genre. I read a Billy Corgan quote the other day that says, you know, like good music knows no real conception of genre, because genre, of course, is a, at least in my mind, is a marketing paradigm, you know, to put things into boxes. And I'm not the first preacher of this prophecy, and not the last by any stretch of the imagination. But to me and to us, it is just music. And so, you know, we listen to metal in our spare time. So whatever we wake up on that day, it's a self renewing process, heroes and inspirations.
Wow. And you mentioned Billy Corgan, or William Patrick Corgan as he likes to be called now. Yeah, really? Do you have a favorite Smashing Pumpkins album?
Siamese Dream. Tough one. They're all great. Siamese Dream for like initially, but then the Machines of God one, the 2001 with what's it called, Stand and Style Your Love and all that there. That's a phenomenal album. Yeah, those two. I know that's not answering the question properly, but yeah,
I know, that's fine. So Machines of God, I think,
that's
is
the one. Yeah,
so it's a trilogy. They've just released Autumn, ATUM,
the rock opera.
Yeah, the rock opera.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah,
I made
the mistake of listening to the weekly podcast episode he released, and he'd talk about a track each episode.
You made the mistake of doing.
Yeah, it got too much, and I realized I just need to listen to the album in full. I'm going to have to do that. But Smashing Pumpkins has always intrigued me. I liked when they did,
of course, Melancholy as well. I forgot to say that.
Oh yeah, of course. And Adore. Where they went electronic, I think that I really enjoyed that. But anyway, that's so interesting, and there's so much knowledge and experience out there, and to be like a sponge is a wonderful thing. You know, you're drawing from all those things, and it sounds like it was a really good musical journey for you. I think your next song features in the fully plugged in version with the band, features a violin, which is just brilliant. But I'm also excited to hear the version you're going to do tonight.
Senza violin, right? Yeah. This one's called Paris. It's out. And it sounds a bit like this.
cause this course is not impressed with the way you like to dress.
That is a great song. Love it so much. And I've seen the performance on your YouTube video on that film or music video you made on the beach. And wow, what a stunning piece of artwork that is.
Thank you.
The thing that I enjoyed was that stepladder and the fact that it didn't sink into the sand when you climbed up it. Was it on a rock or what happened?
Oh no, it's just a bit of really, really dense sand. It's like quite typical of where I'm from, so it just doesn't sink in. It's like if you try and walk on it, you won't sink in the sand. It's just really like wet sand. So just
very hard to get umbrellas in as well.
Oh, perfect. I thought you did some fancy tricks with the photography or something, but yeah.
Oh no, we wish we could say that, but it's just the natural landscape. So.
It's a beautiful, beautiful setting and... The waves crashing in and you going into the sea and fully clothed and I think water brings out such a wonderful thing. It changes everything and we're all kind of come from the ocean. We're part of it. And the song itself about outcasts, and it's like a call to all these people who have felt left out and now we're brought in together. It's a really inclusive, beautiful song. I like it so much. And
like the tadpoles.
Ah, yes, exactly. Wow, who would have thought? But the video itself, can you tell us a little bit more about how that was filmed?
Yeah, we where to start? we always wanted to do a video that was like a black and white on the beach video. That's how the pitch started. And me and Francesca were thinking about what to do, how to do this. And Francesca actually has a really nice house in the southern part of Italy, in Bivona, the same place that we did that
the unplugged version.
We were going there for a holiday, and we were like, you know, why don't we just like bring some gear down and see what happens and try and shoot this video? And we were very fortunate because we were blessed with really, really great light. And that would have been all well and good if we like shot it on an iPhone or anything. But like in the weeks coming before, I bought a camera off eBay and then like hacked it with a bunch of like 4K ultra settings, which means we could get like sort of a bit more of a cinematographic feel to it, but that means that the camera itself was very temperamental. So it's kind of like whatever we shot, we got it, and if it didn't, it didn't. And
there was one particular day in the filming where the camera would only shoot 3 seconds at a time. So when we'd take scenes, we were like, okay, this is 3 seconds, which means it's 6 seconds if we put it slow-mo, but we've got 3 seconds of footage from this.
Yeah. And that sort of, you know, it kind of reminded me of like artists working with, you know, actual film or, you know, a bit more like Pollock, like, or punk aesthetics of like, you know, getting what you get, taking what you can. And it, the sort of fight with the camera actually provides to be really good, because that means you have to be incredibly selective with the contents of which you shoot. So if it's like, you know, if this scene can go, it goes, and you keep the essentials, and that's really really nice. We were also blessed with a really good amount of wind, and that wouldn't be important if you were shooting off the stick and you had a lot of motion, but because this camera is temperamental, it sort of behaved itself best when it was on a tripod. And so when you have the frame incredibly still, you need some sort of motion, and the sea provides that, but also the wind as well. In the textures like clothes or hair, and this curtain that I brought with me again from my grandfather's textile shop in Greece, and just using the natural landscape to the best abilities that you can was something that I think we really enjoyed doing.
Well, it looks stunning, and that sheet works perfectly. You're right. It's like the waves. It's flowing like the sea. But how much fun. You go over there and you get to make a film together. That's just incredible.
It's all courtesy to Francesco's family. You know.
For me, it was, I guess, even more of a heartwarming experience, because that's the house where I used to go every summer. I can't remember the first time I went there. I think I learned to walk in that place. And so obviously having Aris there and deciding we were gonna, you know, make this like debut thing, obviously you don't start by going, yeah, this is gonna be the best masterpiece in cinematography ever, but you know, like, just making this thing together, saying, yeah, we're doing the first music video for Mount St. Helens, and for me doing it there, so doing it in a place where I left my soul there. As and I didn't even know whether we could go this year or not. So it was just very last minute. We were trying to plan going somewhere else, you know, somewhere we could write, I don't know, on a beach or something. And then last minute, I was like, why don't we just go to my place? Because it had such an importance attached to it for my life, for the person I am, for the way I think and the way I see things, that I thought would just, you know, get reflected really well in whatever content we would shoot there. So
I mean, what you're doing is filled with positivity, creativity, and love, and you can tell the way that film is shot. I long for the light in Africa. It's got a different light. I long for the winter light in the UK. I think even though it's gloomy, you can take some great photos, and it's just so nice to see you guys immersing yourselves in this whole creative thing that is being in a band, making music together. It fits really well. It feels right. So well done.
Yeah, it feels right for us as well. Yeah.
It sounds right. It's lovely. I believe you've got one more song. I was going to do a little game when you mentioned that whole punk aesthetic where you just take what you get, and perhaps we could just squeeze it in really quickly. It will be fun.
We'd love to, yeah.
But without belittling people choosing band names, I know punk bands have some crazy names.
Oh, yeah.
I've always played around with band names. I love the idea of bands, the whole thing around it, recording, posters, artwork, everything. And the band name is quite fun. And I've got this game called Boggle. Have you ever played Boggle?
Oh, no, I haven't.
I think I own it, but I've never played it.
I'll get it. We'll just do a quick round. And what you do is you've got a little box with little dice, but on each side there's a letter. And then you shake it around inside this cube, and then the dice fall, and then the letters that are facing up are the ones you can use. And you can use diagonal or straight across, any letters that are joined. And you set a, I think it's a 2-3 minute timer or something. You flip the timer over, like one of those ones where the sand drips down, and then you can write as many words as you see. And I haven't tried this yet, but I thought, you know, if you were searching for a band name, I know you've got a really cool band name, but if you're searching for a punk band name, you could use Boggle, and you could call it band name Boggle.
Which is in itself an interesting band name, I think.
Possibly, yes, it could be.
This is so meta, man.
We've been band name Boggle.
We changed the name.
Yeah. But this is my baked lasagna here, and it sounds like this. Yeah.
So we could just come up with a band name, and then, I mean, you're a lyricist, Aris, and you could perhaps use Boggle
much more poetic than it is. I'm flattered, thank you.
You could come up with a band name and then maybe a song title through Boggle. And I know the Traveling Wilburys did a song. It was called, what was it called? Oh, no, I forgot. There's a song that they've done on their album. And that's obviously the super group, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, Jeff Lynne, George Harrison, and Tom Petty. And they all came together by chance because there was a couple working on something, and then they all came together. And they did this one song where George Harrison was talking about how they got the lyrics, and he was looking through some trashy magazine or something, and there were words that came up in these articles, like from adverts and stuff, like refrigerator, new gearbox, and then they kind of sang those things. And I thought, well, this Boggle could be like a starting point. Let's do it quickly. Just see if we can come up with a band name. Who knows?
Does this mean there's a potential to do a complete rebranding in this shed session right now?
Forget Mount St. Helens.
No. Yours is all very, very cool. This is just playful nonsense. Okay, so here's a little like Boggle box, and I'm going to shake it up, and then okay, there's a couple of pieces that I need to flatten out. Okay, I won't put you on a timer, but see if you can come up with like just one word that might be a cool band name. I'll bring it across to you.
So the rules again, we can do diagonal and next to each
That's
other.
It. As long as the letters are adjoining,
right,
you can come up with a.
So we just make a snake.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, I've just seen one.
Don't say it yet. Don't say it yet.
That's okay.
React.
Yeah, hold on. Okay, we got
Can the two words be separate, or do they need to all be?
Oh, if you wanted two words, that's fine. Yeah, you can do one, and then
React in the bank.
React. The title of the song. Now we need the band name.
This is actually a lot harder than I
thought. Is it? I mean, it's a bit. I've put you on the spot here a bit.
You've got two Mediterraneans doing it as well, so it's not as in the most natural coming to us.
We got Santa.
We got Bert.
Bert is a good name. Bert. I think they're
It's kind of like you know, like kind of Weezer-y, but then they could be like the most sludgy band ever.
Bert React.
Bert React. Very nice.
Reacts.
Here
we have Santa, which is not in the sense, so it kind of bugs me, but that's Santa.
Center act.
I should have set the timer. I should have set the timer on you guys. Five.
Final answer.
Four.
Center act.
But in one word.
In one word.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay, so like that's your band name. Very. Yeah. Oh, Tesseract's a good book. Yeah. Who wrote that? The guy wrote Beach. The Beach. I just the Tesseract. Oh, my brain is gone.
I just know them as like they're like a metal band.
Ah, there you go. So I saw Sect, S-E-C-T, Right, oh, in a line there. Amazing.
So, what, Bert sect?
who knows?
Sect Bert.
Maybe we didn't get such lucky dice on that one, but I mean, that sounds fine.
I think there's plenty more you can do on that.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Let me grab that from you.
There you go.
Thank you. That was fun. I never know how those little games are going to work, but, well, we gave it a try.
Well, the way Mats and Helen came to be is that I had a list of potential band names for ages, you know, since sixth form. And anything that could come up, I just write it down. It could be, like, serious. It could be funny. Like, I had Preachers at McDonald's on that, you know. It's a huge, huge list, and it was burning on for years. And then at some point, I was like, this is quite obviously a procrastination exercise that's stopping me from putting stuff out because I'm scared of putting the music out under anything. So it was very much a point of scrolling through and picking. And I did that a couple of times, and Mounts and Helen was on there. And it's really annoying because I actually can't remember how it made itself onto the list. I don't know where I saw it. I didn't even know it was a real place. Mounts and Helens is a real place, you know. That says something about my geography, but.
Well, it's a volcano, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Seattle.
Seattle, yeah. Seattle. I found that out after. but you know, as we like to say, it just sounds like the music. And that's enough for us.
Perfect. Aris, Francesco, this has been an incredible evening of music, and I've enjoyed the conversation so much.
Yeah, so have we, thank you.
It's been wonderful having you here in the shed and at my home, and I'm very grateful to Andy, who's taking the photos and doing video, and Ian, does the audio. We're surrounded by such talented people, so thank you both, and thank you, Aris, Francesco. It's been a delight, and what a privilege to be able to have you guys come and play in my shed, and I'll always remember this, so thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, so will we, I think.
This is our last song. It's called Helpless.
If Jesus I'm so for real, he'd be a blind man by now. And if God is so for real, she would have left us by now. If there really is a paradise, then I'm sure noisy. If there really is a world on fire, then I'm sure it looks pretty from up here. So when the sky starts to fall, we'll be tearing down the walls. When this earth starts to burn, it'll be our final turn to dance this dance and live our only final chance before we tear this world apart now. But you sure do look pretty, oh my dear. Before we tear this world apart now, But you sure do look pretty, oh my dear. It's just an empty chair, a black tie bonnet tangled in your hair. Oh, it's hopeless, we're helpless, mistrusting, faithless, the selfishly righteous, forsaken and godless tonight.
What's in your shed? What's in your shed?